dead, and in this case it could be me.
Theoretically,
James said.
But could you possibly have done something to make someone that angry?
I doubt it. Although every time the society raises its dues, which are ridiculously low, quite a few people get angry. Angry enough to kill? I don't think so. But researchers can be a bit maniacal. Okay, let's set that aside. Which leaves us with Tyrone and Charisse. The police have checked them out, and while I don't have the details, I gather they passed muster. No dark past or seamy associates. He grew up in North Philly. She was a suburban girl. He's a community activist. She was a city employee. They met through a shared interest in neighborhood revitalization. While there could be an individual who got hot under the collar about what one or the other of them wanted to do with their abandoned or derelict property, it seems more likely to me that a person with a beef would get in their face on the spot, not hire a hitman. And the economic side of that equation doesn't work. Sure, that person would lose the property, but the property isn't worth anything anyway, and probably has a lot of back taxes and such attached. If it's their favorite drug house, there are plenty more empty ones to choose from.
Nell, do you have a point?
James asked. I think so, I said, and was surprised. I thought I was just spitballing. Nobody had a professional reason to shoot at either one of them, unless maybe there's someone in Tyrone's organization who wants to play a bigger role. But killing someone seems kind of extreme, just to move up the ladder of a struggling nonprofit. Which leaves only one alternative. It was personal. James pushed his plate away and leaned back in his chair.
Say that it is. Don't you think Hrivenek has looked into that?
Maybe, but not very hard. Her higher-ups won't let her. The case is closed, more or less.
And what are you going to do about it?
Nothing. It's not my job. I don't have the skills or the right connections, certainly not in that part of town. Or the time, for that matter. I'm juggling a couple of major projects that came out of nowhere, and there's a board meeting this week. I only wanted to sort out my own thinking. And you're a good-sounding board.
Thank you. Is there any cake left?
We adjourned to the parlor and the television with our cake. Chapter 22. The next morning I dressed with particular care. Silly, maybe, but I knew that Edward Perkins was in a position to do something for the society, or at least for the Oliver sisters, and I didn't want to offend him by appearing too casual, as if I wasn't taking him seriously. In my position, I figured I couldn't go wrong overdressing a bit, while underdressing might kill a deal. It was all about appearances. On the way toward the city, I reminded James that he was dropping me off at Marty's house. We'll walk from there to Edward Perkins's house, and then I'll head over to the society.
Got it,
he said, watching the road.
Anything else on the calendar?
Last-minute prep for the board meeting tomorrow, I guess. Nothing else scheduled, but these days things keep popping up unexpectedly. I'll call you when I know where I'll be at the end of the day.
Sounds good to me.
You know, you are far too accommodating, I told him. Don't you have any major crises you have to handle? Can you really just walk away from your desk at 5 o'clock every day? That's not the way television shows portray the FBI. You're all supposed to be racing off to a fresh murder or a terrorist attack. A corner of James's mouth went up.
Since when have television writers gotten much of anything right? Yes, things come up. Recently, I guess I've been given what you might call special consideration after what happened. But it's not necessary, and I assume it will end soon enough. In the meantime, I've gotten a lot of paperwork done.
How exciting, I said, and it came out a bit snarky.
Nell,
James began, sounding exasperated.
I just want to be sure you're not at risk. Your detective friend may have identified the shooter, but as you suggested last night, what if he was working for someone else? That person might try again.
To hurt me? That's ridiculous. You really think a drug-dealing thug would come into Center City just to go after me?
Allow me to worry about you, will you? Would you rather I didn't?
I'm sorry, I said in a small voice. I'm used to looking out for myself. I don't want to be a bother to anyone else. I think he smiled.
In case you haven't noticed, I don't do anything I don't want to do. Well, maybe for Martha now and then. But I want to look out for you, if you'll let me.
I will. But only if you'll let me worry about you when you're back on full duty chasing dangerous people with weapons.
Fair enough. Here we are.
He slid into a parking place outside of Marty's townhouse. I unbuckled my seatbelt, turned, and pulled him closer for a kiss, one that lasted quite a while. "Thank you," I said, "for caring, for watching my back. I'll try to get used to it."
"Do that. Call me later."
After he'd pulled away, I turned to find Marty leaning against her door jamb with a smile on her face. "Nice way to start the day."
"I thought so.
Am I coming in?"
"Yeah, sure. We've got time. Edward's place is only a 10-minute walk away. Coffee?"
"Always." Marty stood aside to let me into her home, and I walked down the long hallway to the big room at the back. She took a quick detour to the kitchen area, set off by walls that didn't extend to the ceiling, and then joined me carrying two mugs of coffee.
"Sit," she said after handing me one of them.
She settled in a chair opposite me.
"You read your materials?"
"I did, yesterday. I always do my homework, even as a kid."
"Suck up," Marty said, but with a smile. "Any questions?"
"Not about the facts. Who's taking the lead today, Edward or us?"
"He hinted that he has a plan he'd like to lay out. I don't have the details, but it sounds promising. And for some reason, Elliot's part of it."
"That I hadn't expected."
"Really?
He hasn't said anything to you about it?"
"Nope. The man is the soul of discretion. But he may be deferring to Edward. And as you may have noticed, a strong will and a full wallet will get you almost anywhere you want to go."
"Amen," I said. I knew I didn't qualify on the wallet front. Where did I fall on strength of will? But I didn't need it today. I was going to listen to Edward Perkins.
Marty and I chatted while we finished our coffee, and then she disappeared and returned wearing a handsome, colorful jacket that I hadn't seen before.
She'd dressed up, too.
"Nice," I said.
"Thanks.
You ready?"
"Sure."
We strolled the few blocks to a quiet street near Rittenhouse Square. I loved walking these neighborhoods. I had to remind myself there was no point in comparing them to the sad slums not far north of where we stood. This was a different universe entirely. They were old and well-maintained and beautiful. Edward Perkins's townhouse was no exception. It was not ostentatiously large, but it was exquisite. Marty rapped briskly with the no-doubt antique brass knocker, and I was surprised when Alice opened the door.
"Good morning, Nell. Marty," she said cheerfully. "Uncle Edward is waiting for you. Follow me."
She turned before we could ask any questions and led us past a handsome staircase to what must have been the back parlor according to the original floor plan. I tried to stay focused, although I really wanted to study the moldings and woodwork. When we entered the room through a graceful arch, Edward Perkins stood. Next to him stood Elliot Miller. I resisted the urge to turn to Marty to see what her reaction was. Elliot smiled broadly at both of us, and I guessed that Marty hadn't been expecting him either.
"Welcome to my home, Nell. Or perhaps I should say my city home. Martha, nice to see you again,"
Edward said graciously, then added,
"Please have a seat. May I offer you some refreshment?"
"Thank you, but no, Mr. Perkins," I said. "Much more coffee, and I'd have to ask to tour the plumbing facilities, although I did have some curiosity about how they'd fitted them in here."
Marty shook her head as well.
"Edward, please. Very well, then. Let us begin."
We all sat. Alice took a straight-backed chair outside of our circle. We waited for Edward to begin whatever it was he wanted to say. He did not keep us waiting.
"My lovely niece Alice has been telling me very nice things about the society since she began working there."
"I'm pleased to hear that," I told him. "She's been a great asset to us. I'd love to have more interns like her."
"I'm happy to know that, and I do hope you've recovered from your unfortunate experience last week."
"I think so. It was disturbing, to say the least, but I can't allow myself to take it personally."
"Goodness no, Nell. Let us hope that the non-profit world does not have to stoop to violence to achieve its goals."
He rubbed his hands together.
"Well, I know that we're all busy people, so I will get to the point. I have been made aware that the Oliver sisters, Phoebe and Penelope, would like to divest themselves of their lovely house, but it is their fond hope that they can preserve it in some way, in form and in substance. I have had the privilege of knowing them for most of our lives. They are not foolish women, and they recognize that the modern world places some demands on any institution, so it is unlikely that their home could be preserved forever, and they are willing to make allowances for some discreet, modern modifications. but their existing resources are not sufficient to guarantee its maintenance in perpetuity, so they turned to me for assistance and counsel. And I think we have arrived at a plan that could work. Will you hear me out?
Of course, I told him. I'm flattered that you've included me in this discussion, but I'm not sure I see what role the Society can play.
Patience, my dear. All things will be made clear. The Oliver House lies only a few miles from Utopia College. Are you familiar with it?
I shook my head. I can't say that I am.
You might have known it under its earlier name, Badger College. The change came about a couple of decades ago. It's a small undergraduate liberal arts college with an excellent teaching staff, which is not easy to maintain in this day and age. It is also the college that Penelope Oliver attended when I first knew her. Unfortunately, she was forced to withdraw after a bout of diphtheria before completing a degree, but she has always retained an affection for the place.
Edward settled himself more comfortably in his brocade-covered wing chair.
I am proposing to make a gift to the college, with the restriction that the funds be used to acquire the Oliver home. This will not be onerous for them. The location of the house is convenient to the campus, and they are in sore need of room to expand. And there are precedents. For example, the Benjamin West House, which Swarthmore College purchased many years ago and has put to good use, all while preserving its historical attributes.
I managed to find my voice. That is an extraordinarily generous offer, Mr. Perkins. Have the Oliver sisters agreed to this?
Oh, yes. They are willing to accept the transaction, as long as the building is maintained in something like its original form, not turned into a computer center or fraternity house or the like. I will ensure that my gift is adequate to provide for the care of the building, and that the funds cannot be diverted to other purposes. Phoebe, Penelope, and I have discussed this proposal, and they are willing to accept some modifications to the building, as long as they are done tastefully. They realize that the world has changed, and that they cannot control the future. So I think we have achieved a satisfactory compromise. They in turn will retire to their summer home, which is smaller and better suited to their current needs. Do you have any questions?
He sat back, looking quite pleased with himself. I felt as though a weight had been lifted from my shoulders. I would not have to choose between projects. It was a lovely house, but I could see no way for the Society to take it on. This way, the Oliver sisters would get their wish, and a college would reap the rewards. I think it's an excellent solution, Mr. Perkins.
There is another component to this transaction, Nell,
Edward added, his eyes twinkling.
The Oliver sisters are in possession of the documents of many generations of their family, regarding not only the house, but the family's social and commercial activities in and around Philadelphia. They would like to make a gift of these papers to the Society, and perhaps provide some funding for the cataloging of them, something they themselves have never been equipped to do. Would your institution be interested in that collection?
I wanted to ask somebody to pinch me to make sure I was really hearing this. We would be delighted to accept such a gift, and we would be honored to provide stewardship. But surely Utopia College has some interest in it. Edward shook his head.
No, their interests lie elsewhere. The college would appreciate it if you provided a summary or copies of the information that pertains to the house itself for their own records, but they do not wish to accept responsibility for the collection. They feel the Society would be better suited as custodian of the Oliver family name.
Then if they are willing, we accept. Maybe I should run it by the board first, but I'd bet they'd be happy. And if I didn't convince them, Marty would. I looked briefly at her, and I swear she looked gobsmacked, which was a rare state for Marty Terwilliger. Edward had pulled a fast one on her. And then I realized that Elliot Miller was still in the room and hadn't yet said a word, just sat quietly with a Cheshire Cat smile. And Marty was staring at him, eyebrows raised. There was apparently more to come. Chapter 23 Edward Perkins did not fail to notice our glances.
As you may have surmised, my story isn't finished quite yet. Would you like some refreshment now? Coffee? Tea?
Much as I hankered to see Edward's collection of Georgian silver, I thought it might be more important to find out what other schemes he had come up with. Thank you.
but I think we'd like to know more about why you've brought us all here.
Of course. There is another component to the Oliver transaction. Its complement, you might say. This scenario involves the house in which we now sit. It has belonged to the Perkins family for generations, but at this point in my life I have no need for more than one home. I plan to move to my house in the country if this scheme succeeds. My intention is to sell this house to my alma mater, the University of Pennsylvania, for less than its full market value. They have been looking for a suitable home for a proposed Center for Urban Transformation, and they feel that this building would suit their needs admirably, inasmuch as it is close, but not too close, to the main campus, and large enough, but not too large, for the anticipated staff. And, of course, it has a certain historical cachet, which is appropriate.
He paused, and I guessed it was for dramatic effect.
Professor Elliot has agreed to assume the directorship of this new institution.
That explained Elliot's presence at this gathering. I am proud to say that my jaw did not drop at this news. I glanced briefly at Marty and wondered how much she had known. Edward went on.
I ask only that the university consider naming this new creation the Perkins Center. I think they can accommodate my vanity in exchange for this building, and they seem more than willing. The purchase price I have suggested to the university is not insubstantial. It is this sale that will provide the funds for my gift to Utopia College, which will make possible their purchase of the Oliver House.
I struggled to wrap my head around the complexities of this arrangement. Edward Perkins was far shrewder than I had ever given him credit for. He no doubt had worked out how to benefit from substantial charitable contributions while making everyone happy. The Oliver sisters, Utopia College, Penn, and even me. The man was one of a kind.
Nell, the wheels are already in motion, and I ask only that you keep this information to yourselves until the details are finalized. I'll let you know when you can release the news, and please feel free to contact me if you have any further questions.
Of course, Mr. Perkins, and I must add this is a wonderful and generous opportunity for all concerned. Elliot finally spoke.
Marty, I'm sorry I couldn't share this with you, but Edward requested that I keep it secret while he negotiated.
Yeah, whatever, Marty mumbled. I could see that she was miffed, and she and Elliot would no doubt have some heated discussions later.
However,
Elliot resumed, looking at all of us in turn,
there is another element of this arrangement that you need to know about. The university possesses excellent archival resources about the city and its history, and I have reason to know that those at the Society complement them. I'd like to see the Society take an advisory role in the Perkins Center, working alongside me and our staff to capture the history of Philadelphia's neighborhoods. All its neighborhoods, including those that have fallen on hard times. Perhaps a seat on the board of the new organization, if anyone on your staff might be interested.
I assumed that wow and gosh and holy cow were not appropriate responses under the circumstances. That would be wonderful, I said sincerely. Would there be any money involved for the Society? This was not the time to ask, nor did it really matter. It would give the Society added visibility in the local community and drag us into the 20th century, if not quite into the 21st. And that would give us a better shot at surviving in the longer term, and it would provide support for our new neighborhoods project. It was the best of all possible worlds, and I was stunned. Edward stood up.
Well, that is all I wished to say. I know you all have other pressing obligations, so I'll let you go. My attorneys will keep you apprised of our progress, but they assure me that the basic elements will be finalized before the end of the year.
The rest of us stood as well, and I stepped forward. Edward, I don't know what to say. This is an extraordinary arrangement, and I'm honored that the Society will be a part of it. He smiled at me.
Nell, I believe that our local history should be preserved and protected now and in the future. That is why I have been a Society member for many years, and I believe your organization should continue to play a role in this process. Under your guidance, and that of your board, you have earned the right to a seat at the table.
And I can only say thank you. I hope we can live up to your faith in us.
I'm sure you will.
We muddled through goodbyes after shaking hands all around with Edward. Alice and I stood on the front stoop while Marty and Elliot exchanged a few private words in the vestibule before joining us.
My head was spinning. Had I really heard what I thought I had? The nonprofit landscape of Greater Philadelphia had just changed before my eyes, and the society was going to be part of it.
Whee!
I turned to Alice. Were you your uncle's mole at the society?
No, she said, but I did tell him I thought the society was doing an excellent job, despite limited resources and funding, and he listened.
Well, whatever role you played, thank you. Is he going to want us to name something after him? Because we will.
Alice waved a hand at that idea. No, this is not about his ego or his legacy. Well, maybe the pen part. He wants to do the right thing. In doing it this way, he helps everyone. The university, the society, the college, and the Oliver sisters. It's a quadruple win situation.
It certainly is. Marty joined us, and we started walking toward the society. The crowded sidewalks gave us little opportunity to talk about the extraordinary meeting we had just left.
I didn't mind. I was trying to process the implications of Edward Perkins's amazing generosity.
I thought possibly LaToya would welcome the chance to serve on the board of the new institute. She had a long-standing interest in abolitionist history in the city, and she was deeply immersed in the collections management side of things, having worked for years with the society's collections. As long as this possible new role didn't take too much time away from her society responsibilities, of course. Alice could handle the Oliver collection. She had already proved more than qualified, and also willing to ask for help when she knew she needed it. It was unclear how much time that process would take, but since her salary was effectively being paid by her great-uncle at the moment, it didn't really matter. Maybe it would keep her around longer than originally planned. I often wished more intelligent young people like Alice would fall in love with history and its artifacts, but places like the Society were seldom at the top of the list when new college graduates went job hunting. Alice peeled off to the cataloging room when we arrived at the Society, and Marty followed me to my office and dropped into a chair while I collected messages from Eric.
Good meeting now?
He asked as he sorted through phone messages. Amazing, actually, but I can't talk about it just yet. Have I missed anything important?
Two calls you might want to return, one from your detective, the other from a V. Blakeney at a bank. The rest can wait.
Thanks, Eric. I went into my office and fell into my chair, feeling a bit like Alice in Wonderland after she had fallen down the rabbit hole. The view was not the same as it had been the day before. I looked down at my messages. Hrivenek said, call, typically terse.
What's up? Marty asked.
As usual, she had followed me into my office without asking. Our detective wants me to call. Give me a minute. I punched in her number and waited until she answered. This is Nell Pratt. You called earlier?
Oh, yeah, right. We got lucky. You know that shooter? He cut a deal. He fingered the guy that sent him after you guys last week, in exchange for a reduced charge on the gun possession and general mayhem on the other offense. The name Raheem Hill mean anything to you?
I can't say that it does. Should it?
Seems like this Hill character paid our shooter to do the deed. Not a heck of a lot. He works cheap. He was probably looking to score points with his gang.
Who are these people? I said, more to myself than to the detective.
Raheem's a mid-level dealer. The shooter is lower down the food chain. Raheem says to jump, he jumps. Only now he's given Raheem up, which isn't good for our boy in custody.
I don't suppose anybody has explained why Raheem wanted to shoot at us.
Nope. He didn't ask. He just did what he was told. But it wasn't a mix-up. He made sure he had the right car.
I figured that much, since he drove by more than once. Well, I suppose that's more than we knew before. Thanks for letting me know.
No problem.
Detective Hrivenek said, and hung up.
What?
Marty asked, staring at me. The shooter was paid by his drug-dealing boss to shoot at us. Damn, I didn't think to ask whether he was told to shoot to kill or just scare us off. I knew he had scared me. Was Tyrone unwelcome there now? Was he involved in something outside of his community efforts that we didn't know about? And what about Charisse? She didn't share Tyrone's history with the neighborhood, but had the police looked past her squeaky clean suburban credentials? I hit speed dial and got the detective back on the line. Did you ask Tyrone if he knew Raheem?
Yeah, of course. He said he knew about him, but he couldn't remember ever going face-to-face with him.
One more thing. Was the shooter supposed to kill anyone or just send a message? There was a moment of silence on the other end. Then the detective said,
The way he put it, he was just gonna shoot up the car. If anyone got hit, too bad. But he didn't say anything about killing someone on purpose. That all you've got?
For now. Thanks. This time we both hung up at the same time.
And?
Marty asked. She seemed to be enjoying herself. Tyrone didn't know Rahim, or so he says. Hrivenak didn't think to ask if this was supposed to be a killing. Tell me this. Why would anybody hire someone to shoot at someone else if he didn't know him?
If you think I understand the way a drug dealer's mind works, you're definitely misguided,
Marty told me.
Then she changed the subject. So what do you think about Edward's plan?
I think it's amazing. Can he make it happen?
I think so. He's made plenty of friends over the years and very few enemies. When he promises something, he delivers. And he doesn't do it for his own glory. Too bad there aren't more like him.
I agree. Did Elliot fill you in beforehand?
He talked about the Institute, early on when Penn first brought it up. These things take time to plan. He did not talk about Edward's plan for supporting it.
And now you're pissed at him?
I asked. Yes. No. Well, maybe. He could have told me something. I do know how and when to keep my mouth shut.
Does this Perkins Institute mean Elliot will be too busy for the Society Board?
I don't think so. And maybe I don't care. He committed to that a while back, and I'm going to hold him to it. Besides, the two roles dovetail so nicely.
No conflict of interest?
I'd call it collegiality. Stop worrying, Nell. It'll work out, and if it doesn't, something good will come of it.
That is an understatement. I want to elevate Edward Perkins to sainthood.
Maybe Shelby knows how to make that happen.
Admit it, Marty. This is an amazing outcome.
I bet you're just mad because it happened without you.
Maybe.
Marty mumbled, avoiding my gaze.
I've got one more call to make. You want to have lunch?
Nope. I've got to check up on what Rich has gotten done and see how this collections shuffling is going.
Go on, then.
I figured she wanted to crawl into the stacks and lick her wounds, but even she couldn't argue with the excellent outcome. When Marty had left, I picked up the phone and called V. A secretary answered in plummy tones and reluctantly put me through when I identified myself.
Hi, V. You called earlier?
Yes, I did, Nell, and thanks for calling back. There's something I'd like to discuss with you. I would have mentioned it earlier, but I wanted to clear it with the partners before I started spreading the word around. And I'd rather not do it over the phone. Unfortunately, I'm jammed up for most of the day. Could you come by my office around 4?
She rattled off the Center City address, which I recognized. I think that works for me. I'll let you know if anything changes. See you later.
One more enigmatic phone call. Interesting. Was I really out of the loop on all fronts? What kind of hush-hush project could she be involved in that would interest me? I guess I'd have to wait and see. All this walking around the city had left me hungry, so I went down the hall and stuck my head into Shelby's office. You want to grab a sandwich? I noticed her desk was appreciably clearer than it had been the day before. Sure. I'm just about wrapped up this grant report so I can celebrate with a ham on rye. You do know how to live. I waited as she gathered up her bag and jacket, and we walked out of the building together, and down to our usual sandwich place on the next block. We ordered, then found ourselves a table next to the window.
Thanks for that information on Edward Perkins.
Oh, that's right. You were meeting with him this morning. How'd that go?
Very, very well. There are some interesting things in the works, but I can't talk about them yet. But let me say that the Society will benefit mightily.
Not necessarily with money, but with prestige and visibility, which might ultimately lead to more money.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Did the information help?
Yes. It helped to confirm that Mr. Perkins is a man of his word and has the resources to back it up. That's rare these days.
Our sandwiches arrived, and we settled down to eat. Halfway through my sandwich, I commented, I had another odd call this morning, from V. Blakeney. You know her?
Can't say I recognize the name. Who is she?
She's Tyrone Blakeney's wife, and she's a hotshot investment banker at a big firm here in the city.
What do you think she wants with you?
I haven't a clue. Sounds like another mysterious project. I have to say, we must be doing something right, because at least people are looking to include the Society in their hush-hush projects. You can take some of the credit for that, getting our name out there.
Shelby smiled.
What about you? You've been in the paper plenty recently.
Yes, but usually for the wrong reasons.
I'm not sure how crime-solving fits in with high finance or community development, but I'm more than willing to listen to other people's ideas.
Well, here's to us. Shelby and I clinked our bottles of iced tea. After lunch, I returned to my office and let Eric know that I'd be leaving for a meeting at about 3:45. Then I called James. He answered with his professional voice. It occurred to me that I'd never seen his office at the FBI. Did he occupy a desk in a bullpen situation, or did he have his own office with a door that closed? Was there anyone who could overhear his conversations, or were they all being recorded?
James Morrison. Oh, no. Hi. Something up?
Three things. I could be businesslike, too. One, the meeting with Mr. Perkins was great, and I'll fill you in later. Two, Detective Rivenack told me that a drug dealer named Raheem Hill paid one of his flunkies to shoot at the car last week. And three, I'm meeting Tyrone Blakeney's wife, V, at her office at 4 to discuss something she wouldn't reveal to me over the phone. Can you meet me there?
5:30 work for you? Give me the address and I'll park somewhere and meet you downstairs.
That's fine. I told him where to find me coming out of the building. See you then. The FBI listeners would have nothing to giggle about after that romantic conversation. At 3:45, I gathered up my things again, said goodbye to Eric, and set off for V. Blakeney's office. It was located in one of the high-rises that lined Market Street on the other side of City Hall. I was certainly getting some exercise this way, but it felt good. When I reached the building, I had to check the listings in the lobby. V worked for Dillingham Harrington, one of those firms that had resulted from the multiple mergers of the old guard firms after the financial ups and downs of the past decade or more. I didn't pay much attention to who was who these days, since I had nothing that vaguely resembled an investment, unless you counted my half of the Chestnut Hill house. And the society had been using the same small local bank for decades. The building was gleaming, the elevator was swift and silent, and the lobby of V's firm was quietly impressive. I introduced myself to the receptionist, who announced my presence through her discreet earpiece phone, and a minute later, V came down a hallway to meet me.
Thank you for coming on such short notice. I know that Tyrone appreciated your stopping by the hospital to see him.
I wanted to be sure he was all right. I was a bit surprised he left the hospital so quickly with his injuries.
V smiled. I think he was trying to prove that he was stronger than he actually is. Some men are like that.
Are you married?
No.
No, not at the moment. I was still struggling with how to answer that. Well, I wasn't married currently, although I had been once. I was in a committed relationship. That sounded stiff. I had a partner. Silly. I lived with my boyfriend. For heaven's sake, he was an FBI agent. Gentleman friend. Paramour. I stuck with the simplest answer. No. Have you and Tyrone been married long?
More than 10 years. We met just after college. He was already involved in community organizing activities then, but I decided to get an MBA at Wharton, so I went in a different direction.
You told me you'd been involved with John Street's initiative. You must have been fairly new here then.
I was, so I ended up doing a lot of the tedious work. But Tyrone's insights into the community were invaluable to me, and helped me capture the attention of some of the more senior members. And in a sense, that's why I asked you here today. As I told you, that original project has had a fairly decent track record, and now that it's wrapping up, the firm is interested in carrying it forward, at least in spirit, and has asked me to take the lead on it.
Have you heard the term impact investing?
No, I can't say that I have.
What is it?
V smiled. Let me explain it to you, and tell you what it can do for the city of Philadelphia.
Chapter 24. I'm sorry. V said, I'm forgetting my manners. It's been a long day. Would you like something to drink? Tea? Coffee? Sparkling water? I took her offer to mean that this visit would take more than a few minutes.
No, I'm fine.
All right, then. V sat back in her leather swivel chair behind her spotless desk, her back to the spectacular view of City Hall through the floor-to-ceiling plate-glass windows.
In simplest terms, impact investing is investing that generates both a financial and a social return. It addresses social problems by making capital available from a variety of sources to fund programs that improve people's lives and communities. It's not new. It's been around for perhaps 2 decades in an organized manner, and now $1 out of every 9 is invested in ways guided by social or environmental concerns. DH has decided to create a new department within the firm to address ways of bringing new capital to finance community and economic development. It took me a moment to translate D.H. to Dillingham Harrington. While I was not versed in the ways of public finance, I caught the drift of what she was saying.
You're talking about raising money to support neighborhood projects, like Tyrone's?
Yes, in essence, although giving to his group would no doubt be construed as favoritism. But broadly speaking, we here at D.H. can bring together a range of investor types, combining different vehicles, in order to diversify the risk to the individual investors, who in turn are willing to accept a somewhat lower return, with the knowledge that they are doing something worthy. Affordable housing has been the prime example, because there is an anticipated income stream of rental payments and subsidies. Public funding from the city or the state, and pure philanthropy cannot meet all the demands of projects such as these. But we can work closely with those entities to assemble successful packages. It sounded good. It probably looked good on paper. Did I believe her? I wasn't sure. Do you need the city's support, or at least their blessing for this? The mayor is firmly behind this, but we would also hope to pull in corporate financing from local companies, and on the flip side, to create equity investment opportunities to provide capital for other collaborative enterprises. It sounds very persuasive, but isn't there an intermediate step? I'm sure you know neighborhoods like the one I visited with your husband last week. They're dangerous wastelands. How do you persuade anyone to invest in such a disaster zone? That's an intelligent question, Nell, and an important one. No one is promising that this will be easy, but it's something that needs to happen, and we believe in it. We are still in the early phases, but we've spoken to some important construction firms who we think are on board, and as I mentioned, the city is behind us. As well they must be, since they hold a substantial number of properties in the areas we're addressing. This has to be a collaborative effort. Time to cut to the chase. I'm impressed. But why am I here? I'm assuming it's not for the money, because the society has none to give. It was Tyrone who first approached you, right? I think he was on the right track. Your society can provide the human element for what, for want of a better term, will be our sales pitch. You have the resources to show what the city's neighborhoods once were, and what we hope they can be, again. We can talk about numbers and wave handsome architectural drawings around, and then watch investors' eyes glaze over. You can make the neighborhoods real to them. I studied the woman in front of me, about my age, better dressed than I was, clearly intelligent and articulate. Did she believe in this venture, or did she see it as a stepping stone to a vice presidency at the firm? Assuming, of course, that the venture wasn't a total bust, it wouldn't be the first time. Philadelphia was littered with failed projects. "Why do you think this can be successful?" I asked. "Haven't there been other efforts like this, such as Streets Initiative?" "Yes, of course. The neighborhood's problem in the city is not new, and the city, the state, and even the federal government have thrown money at it. Realistically, it's usually too little, and it dries up too quickly. But times have changed. Impact investing has a decent track record. We've been careful about jumping in, waiting to see how other efforts have fared and what mistakes were made. We think the time is right to move on this now." "What does Tyrone think?" I said, mainly to satisfy my own curiosity. Surprisingly, V looked away. "If I may be honest, Tyrone thinks I'm selling out, that I'm going to ride this current fashionable trend to get what I want, which is both money and job security. I won't defend investment banking in general. A lot of established firms manage to tarnish their own reputations and have paid the price, but I believe in DH and their sincerity in advancing this effort, and I want to be part of it." She looked past me, and I wondered if she was checking to be sure the door to her office was closed. Then she looked back at me. "No, I don't often bring this up, but I was raised in the same neighborhood as Tyrone. I know what the problems are. I've worked hard to get where I am today. But in part that's because I feel I can be more effective in bringing about real change from here, rather than on the streets like Tyrone." "That I would never have guessed. And how do you feel about what Tyrone is doing, which may have gotten him shot?" "I respect my husband, Nell. He is truly committed to saving his neighborhood. My own opinion is that he's pouring a lot of energy into his efforts, but they're too small to really make a difference. It takes too much money and power to make the changes he wants to see happen, and he'll never be able to access that through a small community organization." I studied her for a moment. "It sounds like your goals are the same, but it's your methods that differ." "That's true. Philadelphia is our home and always has been. It breaks my heart to see neighborhoods going downhill the way they have, even within my lifetime. I have the chance to make a real difference, and I've fought to make this firm see that. I hope Tyrone will be on my side. We want the same thing. I gave myself a mental shake. It was getting late, and we needed to get down to details. What would you like to see from us, and what's your timetable? Did V look relieved? We hope to announce a fully fleshed-out project after the first of the year. Any sooner, and it would get lost in the holiday muddle. In any event, it will take that long to get all the players lined up. Once we define a specific project, we'd like to see your society put together a presentation on the before aspects on the area, something we can distribute to investors, something professional. With plenty of pictures? No, I'm not being sarcastic. I know that people like the old pictures and that sometimes they don't bother to read the words. But bear in mind that I wouldn't want to put out anything that didn't reflect conscientious scholarship or that misrepresented the past. You know, not just happy children playing in the streets or colorful festivals. These neighborhoods were diverse and vital. They had schools and shops and churches, and people knew one another, even watched out for one another. I hope that's what you want to convey. Exactly. And I wouldn't presume to interfere with your selection. I assume there would be some financial consideration. Awkward phrasing, but not as crude as asking how much, of course. She named a figure that almost made me swallow my tongue, just for a bit of responsible research that we might even do anyway, pro bono. If she was trying to buy my support, she was doing an excellent job of it. I struggled to recover my balance. If you were successful, perhaps we could consider combining the individual portions as a book sometime in the future? An excellent idea. So, are you interested? I can't commit for my institution without consulting with my board. Not exactly true, but I was trying to be cautious and allow myself time to consider all sides of the idea. But I'm sure they'll be interested in your proposal. When do you expect to make a public announcement? Probably in January. Is that a reasonable amount of time for your people to pull together something we could use? Maybe the cold and snow will keep the most active criminals behind closed doors and allow for some photo ops, I thought to myself. I glanced at the elegant crystal clock on her side table, nearly 5:30. I'm sure we could manage that, as soon as you nail down which part of the city you want to target first. I'm sorry, I should be going. I'm meeting someone. Of course, I appreciate your taking the time to meet with me. Why don't we walk out together? I'm finished for the day. Just let me gather my things and check with my secretary, unless you're in a terrible hurry. No, that's fine. Now that she thought she'd won me over, she was certainly being friendly. I'll only be a moment. She hurried out to her secretary's desk outside her office and began speaking to her. To give her privacy, I walked to the windows and gazed down at the city laid out below. There was City Hall, the heart of the city, at the intersection of Broad Street and Market Street. Just as William Penn had envisioned more than 300 years earlier. Much had changed, but history was still very much with us. And beyond it lay North Philadelphia. But there was nothing to be seen in that direction, just flat ground or what was left of the old row houses. I had to admit that some of the public commentators had got it right. It looked like images I'd seen of World War I war zones. I wondered if V had recognized the irony of her office location. Looking back at the place she had come from, to the center of things. She had done well for herself. Maybe she saw this impact investing as her way of giving back, not merely a smart and trendy business idea. If it worked, she would probably accomplish far more in practical terms than Tyrone could hope for. What did he think about what his wife was doing? And why had he come to me before she had? Were they working together, or did they have separate agendas? V came up behind me. All set. Wonderful view, isn't it? It is, and it looks so different than what you see from ground level. My office, albeit in a corner, had a wonderful view of a defunct nightclub, a parking lot, and, the only saving grace, one of the city's murals. Maybe this view versus Tyrone's summarized the two differing viewpoints. Tyrone saw individual people on the ground, while V saw the big picture, where old and new, rich and poor met. "Shall we go?" V asked. "Fine." I followed her out to the elevator banks, and we took an express to the ground floor. "Do you drive to work or take public transportation?" I asked, mainly to make conversation. "I walk when the weather permits," You know where we live. It's not far. I call for a car if the weather is bad, or if I have an early or late appointment. Must be nice. But then I had a car and driver, at least for the moment, and they should be waiting for me downstairs. We walked out of the lobby on the Market Street side. Traffic out of the city was peaking. I scanned the curb for James's car, but it wasn't in sight. I wasn't worried, since I was a few minutes early. "It was great talking with you, Nell," V said. "I'll call you when I have more information. I'm heading home now." She turned to walk toward the river, when suddenly her path was blocked by a large black man with a shiny bald head. He looked respectable enough, with a newish leather jacket that fit him well, and a large gold watch on his arm. V stopped just in time to avoid walking into him. "What do you want, Rahim?" she asked, her voice icy. Rahim? It couldn't be a coincidence, could it? Rahim, the North Philly drug dealer. Rahim, who had arranged for that punk shooter. What was he doing here on Market Street?
"Hey, Ronnie, just wanted to talk with you. You don't return my calls or nothing."
His words seemed innocent enough, but his tone was cold. Wait, he knew V? Or Ronnie? "We don't have anything to say to each other, Rahim," she said stiffly.
"You'd be wrong about that, I'm thinking. After what I'd done for you?"
The man wasn't budging. I tried to figure out what to do now. I could melt away and pretend I'd never seen him, or I could jump to V's aid, although apparently she knew the guy. Or I could call the police and give them some wild story and they'd send somebody just to see if it was true. Or I could call James, although if he was driving, I wasn't sure he'd answer. I was reaching into my bag to find my cell phone when Rahim's gaze shifted to me. It wasn't friendly.
You lady been all over the news this week, right? You a friend of Tyrone's?
V turned to me and frowned. Was I supposed to play dumb? The man had already recognized me from the papers. "We've met," I said neutrally. He nodded once.
"Me and Ronnie here, we got things to talk about. We gonna go somewhere and talk. You can go."
I looked at V, and now I thought I saw a flash of fear. "I'm not sure V wants to go with you, Rahim." Rahim had somehow managed to inch closer to V, and now he looked down at her. He must have outweighed her by 100 pounds easily. If he fell over on her, she'd be flattened.
"That right, Ronnie? You don't want to talk with me?"
"I'm not going anywhere with you, Rahim. Leave me alone." She took a step back, but he closed the gap again.
"Just want to talk, Ronnie, about you and that little bitch your man was hanging around with."
And the pieces came together in my head. Rahim knew V. He had seen Tyrone and Charisse together. Maybe in his mind he thought he was helping her, or that Tyrone was somehow insulting him by running around on his wife in his old neighborhood, Rahim's turf. What conclusion he had drawn might or might not be correct, but he'd landed there with both feet. What had he done?
"Is there a problem here, Nell?"
James's voice made me jump. I hadn't heard him come up behind me, but I was overwhelmingly glad that he was there. I took a step back, so I was standing beside him. Heck, I wanted to duck behind his broad back and hide, but that would make me look foolish. The little drama that followed, played out on a broad public sidewalk in the center of a busy city at rush hour, would have been highly entertaining if I weren't in the middle of it. V looked predictably confused. She had no idea who James was and what he was doing there, much less why he had stepped in and come to my assistance. Rahim, on the other hand, realized his control of the scene was being challenged, and somehow managed to make himself look bigger. Like a tomcat trying to scare off an adversary by fluffing out his fur, I thought irreverently. Of course, it didn't work. James didn't react, merely pulled aside his suit jacket so that Rahim could see his badge and gun. He didn't have to say a word. Rahim's expression changed quickly once he knew what he was facing. He took a step back. His eyes flicked back at V.
"I can see I ain't welcome here, Ronnie, but we gotta talk. You gonna listen, you hear me? You owe me."
He gave James a long look, like a kid on the playground saying, "You don't scare me, nya-nya," then turned on his heel and walked away. He turned down the first street he came to and got into a waiting car, which disappeared quickly. James watched until he was out of sight.
"I guess I wasn't late,"
he said. I resisted the strong urge to throw my arms around him. "No, I'd say you were right on time."
Chapter 25.
Would you mind telling me what was going on here?
James asked. It seemed a very reasonable request, but I couldn't explain much. I turned to V, who was standing stock still on the sidewalk, looking mortified. I was pretty sure she would rather I hadn't seen that confrontation, but what would have happened if I hadn't been there? V, that was Raheem Hill, wasn't it? That made her spin around to face me.
How do you know about him?
I glanced at James, who appeared to have made the connection, now that he had the name. Then I said, I think we need to sit down and talk about this. Maybe with the police?
That startled V. What?
Why? She actually looked like she didn't understand what I was talking about. I wavered. Should we try to sort out what was going on here, or should we go straight to Hrivenak's office before we jump into the story? Raheem is wanted for questioning in connection with Charisse Chapman's death.
You mean, when Tyrone...
Nalvi seemed completely at a loss. I glanced at James for guidance.
Call the detective,
he said. I checked to make sure V wasn't going to bolt, unlikely in those designer heels, then walked a few paces to make the call. Luckily, Detective Hrivenak answered.
What do you want?
She barked. Don't you ever go home? We've found a link to Raheem Hill, and you need to hear it now. In fact, he was here just a minute ago, but he's gone now.
Crap,
she muttered. Maybe she had a life outside of work after all.
He didn't happen to tell you where he was going.
Her tone was clearly sarcastic. He got into a car and it headed toward the river, but it was a one-way street, so the driver didn't have much choice. No way we could follow him or see where he turned. Hrivenak sighed.
Where are you?
Corner of Market and 18th Streets.
I'll meet you at your place in 10.
She hung up. I walked back over to where V and James were standing, as foot traffic flowed around them. We're meeting her at the Society. Have you two introduced each other yet? I didn't mean to be rude, but I get kind of flustered when cornered by large, menacing men.
Yes, we took care of the formalities.
James told me.
We should get over to the Society. We can't do anything about Raheem right now, so let Hrivenak send her people after him.
V, you okay? I asked. She still looked stunned. She straightened her back and looked me in the eye. Yes, I'll be fine. Let's get this sorted out. We piled into James's car and circled the block, making our way back to the Society. James scored a parking spot in a lot across the street, mainly by flashing his badge. It could have been a plastic copy of almost anything. The lot attendant didn't examine it too closely, just waved the car in. We crossed the street and stood huddled in our doorway, watching for the detective. You've never seen our collections, have you, V? I asked, just making small talk. No, she said tersely. You should come back sometime, when we don't have other issues to deal with, and I'll give you the grand tour. Unless V was somehow implicated in whatever had happened with Tyrone and Charisse, and ended up in jail. So much for that generous consulting fee. Easy come, easy go. Hrivenak pulled up and parked on the street, oblivious to traffic. She charged up the steps to where we were waiting.
We going in, or are we going to stand here and freeze our butts off?
She asked me while scoping out V. Apparently the detective was not in a happy mood. V kept her own gaze steady. Just waiting for you, I said. Hang on while I disarm the alarm. I unlocked the massive front door, then quickly punched in the key code, and the others filed in. I shut the door behind them and said, Conference room?
Yeah, fine.
Hrivenak said, and marched off in the right direction. She'd been here before, too often. We all trooped into the room and found seats, James taking the farthest one. Once again, he had no active role in the proceedings, yet here he was. Hrivenak was going to think we were joined at the hip.
Can we get this over with? The detective demanded. I'd like to get home sometime today.
Fine. Detective Hrivenak, do you know Veronica Blakeney? She's Tyrone's wife?
No, I don't, although I know of her.
The detective studied V, and I wondered if she was trying to picture her and Tyrone together. I had to admit, it was an odd pairing. V didn't flinch at the scrutiny. I go by V, detective. As you may already know, I'm a vice president at Dillingham Harrington, and I invited Nell over to my office for a meeting this afternoon.
And you need me here, why?
Detective Hrivenak demanded, glaring at me, definitely in a bad mood. Since V hadn't volunteered any information,
I decided to go ahead and explain what I had seen when we came out of the building, up through the point when James had swooped in and saved us. Well, I didn't put it exactly that way. James did not interrupt. I wrapped up by saying, I asked V if the man was Raheem Hill, and she said yes. After that, we decided we needed to talk this over with you.
Good, she said. Then she turned to V. What's your connection with Raheem Hill?
He's my cousin, V said curtly, and stopped. One of Detective Rivenack's eyebrows twitched. Apparently this was news to her.
You are aware that he is a drug dealer, with a criminal record?
Yes, I am. V stopped again. I was beginning to wonder if it would be legal to shake her with the police officer present.
Do you know that the police are looking to speak with Raheem Hill in connection with the shooting of your husband and the death of Charisse Chapman last week?
That brought the first real reaction from V. She cleared her throat, fighting for self-control. Then she said more calmly, I was not aware of that until Nell told me a short time ago. I have had little contact with Raheem for years, by my choice, but my relatives have kept me up to date on his activities.
First cousin, is he?
When V nodded, the detective pressed on. You grow up in North Philly? V's chin went up half an inch. Yes, I did. I've never made a secret of that. I did well in school, got a scholarship to college, and never looked back. My parents are dead, and I've had little reason or desire to visit my old neighborhood.
Ah, Rivenek said. But you still know people there. You're married to Tyrone Blakeney.
Yes.
He from the same neighborhood?
Yes. He was a few years older than I was, so we didn't meet when we were growing up. We met after college, when we were both working on a community project.
You know the details of what happened last week? In your old neighborhood?
Of course. Tyrone told me about it. In part, that's why I wanted to talk to Nell, to see if there was some way to make it up to her for what she stumbled into with Tyrone.
Did you know Charisse Chapman?
Only by name. Tyrone had mentioned her. Said that she worked for the city on abandoned properties. Why is it you think that Raheem had anything to do with that?
We caught the guy who did the shooting, and we're holding him for murder. He told the police that Raheem had hired him for the job.
V looked sincerely bewildered. But why?
We thought maybe you could tell us that.
I have no idea. V protested. I mean, I know Tyrone spends time in that neighborhood, but he's never said it was unsafe for him. I don't think he's made any enemies there. Certainly no one who would want him dead. He doesn't do drugs and he doesn't sell them. He's trying to do something good there.
I broke into their dialogue.
Detective, Raheem said that V owed him after what he did for her. V, does that mean anything to you? I have not seen the man in years. I have not called him, texted him, emailed him, or passed on a message through friends. Nothing. I did not ask him to do anything for me, nor would I. If he's been trying to get in touch with me, I don't know about it. Maybe he doesn't have the right number. Maybe my secretary has been screening my calls.
What about at home? He ever call you there?
I don't think so. If he didn't leave a message, I wouldn't know. Maybe Tyrone is picked up. He's in and out a lot. Or maybe the calls came to his office. But if he did hear from Raheem, he didn't pass on any messages to me.
Maybe he and Raheem have something going on, the detective asked.
Like what? V said.
Maybe they're cutting a deal to clear the drugs out of part of the neighborhood so your husband's project can go forward.
V shook her head vehemently. Tyrone doesn't operate that way. He believes in law and order, even though that's not always easy where he comes from, as I'm sure you know. I assume you've checked his record. He's never been in trouble, right? Even a hint of trouble.
No, he's pretty squeaky clean,
Detective Rivenack admitted,
unless he's real good at covering his tracks.
I was having trouble sitting still. Was there a point here? Would it come out before Christmas?
So what was Raheem talking about today, when he said he did something for V? I think we better have a chat with him and find out, the detective said. Problem is, we've had some trouble finding him. He moves around a lot. Can you help us with that, Ms. Blakeney?
I don't exactly send the man Christmas cards, she said. I have no address for him.
Yeah, but you know who his family is. They still there?
Some, V admitted.
Write down what you know and we'll check them out. He's got to live somewhere, even if he moves around.
Rivenack pushed a pad and pen across the table toward V. V looked into space for a moment, then began writing. I glanced at James, who sat in rock-like silence. Okay, fine. This was not his game. I started musing out loud. So somebody shoots at a car with Tyrone, Charisse, and me sitting in it, in a lousy neighborhood. The police find the guy with the gun. He says Rahim hired him to do it. Rahim turns out to be related to V,